some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. Today is August 30th, 2011. This show is being recorded at Omegang Brewery in Cooperstown, New York. The theme tonight is hops, history, and brewing future. Got my great friend here, Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger.
Hey, Jimmy.
And some special guests, Scott Ficarro from Captain Lawrence Brewery.
Hello.
Sean Lawson from Lawson's Finest.
Howdy.
And Garrett, what's your last name?
Livermore.
Garrett Livermore. What do you do, man?
I'm the vice president of the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown, New York.
All right. So he's here for because we have a lot of good friends on Beer Sessions Radio, and our sponsor is GreatBrewers.com. Thanks to them, and also to the Good Beer Seal, an association of 34 New York City good beer bars. So we're tonight again, Omegang Brewery, the Belgian comes to Cooperstown.
BCTC.
Dave, are you having a good time out here?
I'm having a really good time.
So what do you think about this event?
This show keeps me actually kind of sober throughout the day, which is different. That has to change right after this show.
Well, you got invited here to come Friday.
Yeah.
But the real event is actually Saturday.
Saturday, yeah.
And then it keeps going until Sunday.
Until Sunday. Wow. Right through the night.
What are some of the highlights of the event for you?
Well, actually, today is Sean Lawson's birthday, so that's kind of
Wow. Hey.
Obviously, he has a couple of fans here, but last year was his 40th birthday on Friday night, and that was his first time here, so that was a huge deal. Kind of reinvigorated our campsite over there, and then this year we're sort of continuing it, so it's kind of cool.
Well, let's go around. Scott, what do you think about this event?
It's a blast. This has got to be my favorite event of the year. You know, it's a great weekend of fun. A lot of good beers to drink.
And we're drinking one of your beers, right?
Yes. Yeah, we got some Golden Delicious. It's a apple brandy barrel aged triple. So it's
amen.
It's got a little pop to it, you know. It'll warm you up.
And Scott does a pig roast every year, which is a huge deal. It's like part of the festival lore. How big is it this year?
It's a 215 pounder this year.
It looks like a human being. In a plastic bag. It's like the scariest looking thing.
I've driven it up here 4 years in a row without any issues. This year I missed a turn, tried to turn around someone's driveway,
yeah,
and actually flipped the pig roaster in the middle of the road last night at around 10:30, and had to flag down some random guys to help me turn it back over. Yeah. But it's safe now. It's cooking.
It's safe.
You mean that you have like a roasting machine?
Yeah, I trail behind my truck.
Like a smoker?
Yeah, it's basically a giant oven, yeah.
And do you guys use that regularly?
It's actually our farmers. The farmer who takes all our spent grain, he uses it for parties, and whenever we need it,
which
we get a pig.
Is that?
Hemlock Hill Farm up in Cortland Manor.
You touched on a good point. I mean, it's a really interesting part of what small craft breweries are doing is working. They should be working with small farmers. So you take your spent grain, about how many pounds a week do you have?
Wow. A lot.
It all goes to this one farmer?
It all goes to one farmer, yeah, and he basically supplements his cattle, you know, cattle feed with the spent grain.
Where is he? What's his name again?
John D. Maria up in Cortland Manor. They're actually, I think it's Westchester's oldest still operating farm, 1939. And they actually just got a grant from New York State that it'll be open space forever. It was basically a farm grant, and it's now a farm forever.
So you're almost like a green brewery then, in some ways.
He has a green t-shirt.
I'm just happy we don't have to throw it away.
Well, the reason I say that, you're right. I mean, these are things that people talk about and people that really care about, things like beer and food. I mean, a lot of breweries do have to throw it away.
It's definitely like going back to the agricultural side of it and keeping that sort of connection between the land and the beer going.
It's like the circle of life. We feed his cows and then his cows feed us. Everybody's happy.
Well, and are you guys expanding your brewery?
We are. We're actually going to be moving about 4.8 miles down the road to Elmsford, and we're building that. We've begun construction. That's basically a giant warehouse that we're taking a section of, and it's got expansion space that we can take in a year or two, and then down the road some more, and much higher ceilings, which is nice.
How are you expanding the brew house? Like, what are you going from to?
We have a 20 barrel right now. We're going to a 40 barrel, and so our largest tanks are 80 barrels now, so we'll go to 160. So we can do 4 brews in a day.
And so how many barrels did you do last year, and then what do you think you're going to do this year?
We did 6,500 last year. We'll probably do 8,500 this year, and it's 98% draft. So
right.
The new place, hopefully we'll get into bottles.
And the new place, like how much could you do? Like what?
We could do about 50,000.
Wow.
So
that's a huge jump.
Big space. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, if we crammed it, packed it full of tanks, and
right.
We're able to continue to sell more beer. So,
so you're still going to be considered a small craft brewery.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I guess, you know, it's all relative, right?
But well, it's relative because I think that people think that's cool, too.
Yeah,
I mean, I think there's an appeal to buying from a smaller, you know, local craft brewery. I mean, don't you feel that way, Dave?
Oh, definitely. I mean, you know, he's still under 10,000, and, you know, even when you go above that, he's still, like, very locally oriented.
Yeah, I mean, our sales, we're only in the lower 15 counties of New York State and Connecticut. We're pretty tight geographically, our distribution. So as much beer as New York City will drink, we'll keep brewing.
What was the first brewery you ever worked at?
First brewery, well, Sierra Nevada, right out of school.
I had no idea.
Yeah, I did 2.5 years brewing there. It's a fun place.
Wow.
It's like, it was like grad school, you know? It's cool.
And did you go to like a brewing school or anything? Or?
I got my bachelor's degree in fermentation science from Davis.
But the story is that he had to drop out of he decided he was supposed to be an accountant.
Yeah.
According to his parents.
Yes.
And then he didn't want to do that, so he dropped out of college. But he was too young to go to brewing school, so he went to like junior college for 2 years.
Yeah,
out in California.
I had to become a California state resident to get into Davis, because otherwise you need, you know, 1800 on your, you know,
but
SATs.
He wasn't 21, so he couldn't go to brewing school.
But yeah, it was cool.
You have to be 21 to go in brewing school?
Yeah, actually, you just need to be 21 to drink it, so you can still learn about it.
You can still learn about it.
Wow. But yeah, it was cool. Cool setup. Like when I was out there, we were brewing on a system that was built in the 50s. You know, that was the classroom, this little brew house. It's a piece of crap. And the year after I left, they put in this, you know, nice state-of-the-art brew house. Very nice stuff. I see pictures. But yeah, it was fun.
And how did you end up coming to the East Coast?
I grew up in New York. I grew up in Westchester, yeah. So grew up in New York, started home brewing in high school, 17. And that's when I decided I wanted to go to school for it. So one little detour at Villanova for a year trying to, you know, see if I could become an accountant, and basically failed out and decided that brewing was what I wanted to do.
Isn't your dad now your accountant?
Yeah. Yeah, he went to Villanova. I was basically following in his footsteps.
He was following
in
his footsteps, and he just dropped the whole thing.
He is much happier now, let me tell you.
He's
retired, and he comes to work every day, and has an IPA at 10 o'clock in the morning, and he's good to go.
You name beers after him, he's like...
Well, that's just in case I have to move back into his house at some point in life.
All right. Well, I mean, how much have you worked with Captain Lawrence at Blind Tiger?
Well, actually, this year was really fun because we got to go up to the brewery. He's got a great barrel aging program, and we got to go up and hang out in the barrel room, and Jen Schwartman and I, and it was really, really fun. And just, you know, he basically taught us flavor profiling. You're trying all these things out of barrels. Probably he doesn't even know how they're going to taste. He hasn't had them in a while.
You really don't. You just kind of
And so then you're just trying to, like, blend things and get the right combination so you hit certain points.
We had our graduated cylinder.
Right.
And we were, you know, doing 50 mils of this barrel and 30 mils of this barrel, and then, you know, put them all together.
But I've heard you're trying to make more sour beers, aren't you?
Well, we'd like to continue doing it, absolutely.
How do you do that in the same brewery? Isn't there some rules about making
sour?
Yeah,
you can't use the same equipment. I mean, the same hoses, you know, gaskets. You got to change all that stuff out.
So what do you have, a designated sour area?
I wish we did.
I
mean, our brewery now is just pretty tight, so we're crammed in. We're doing a little bit of everything everywhere, but the new place will allow us to kind of separate and, you know, have a little corner relegated to the sour stuff, but, yeah.
Are you going to expand the, because you have a little over 100 barrels now, are you going to expand that side of it? Or
I think we'll have room, the Golden Delicious, which is one that, you know, we try to make year-round, but
right. We
don't have a lot of room for the barrels, so we're going to do more of this one, and we'll definitely expand the barrels for the sours, and there's a lot of space in the new ones. I could stack them, you know, all the way up to the ceiling, and
nice. It'll
be fun. You know, right now it's kind of, we have barrels of this and barrels of that, and, you know, we could do different blends. We just did some blends the other day, but it hasn't really, you know, other than the cuvée and the roast, so it's not really a program per se. It's more of putting things together. And so having more space will kind of allow us to be more dedicated to specific beers. And,
right.
I've had some of your cool bottling. Do you do your bottling in the brewery itself?
We do, yeah. We do it by hand, all the sours.
Oh, yeah? So the Imperial IPA, that's...
That gets done on a line.
Oh, it does?
Just the sours go by hand. Yeah, we do like, you know, 200 cases in a day by hand, and it's your shoulder's sore. Yeah.
So you're really that hands-on?
Cracking it, yeah.
Like if somebody needs like repairing, or you're there on every day doing
absolutely.
Everything?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're very fortunate, though. The guys that sold us our bottling line were actually at the end of the street. So I can just walk down there and be like, I need a new gasket, or this isn't working, and they come down and help me.
Really?
So yeah, which is nice. You know, Friday nights, the techs are drinking at the brewery in the tasting room, and they'll be fiddling around with the bottling line, making sure it's running right. I'm like, do what you got to do. Works for me.
Wow. Dave, what do you think about Captain Lawrence? I mean, we can talk objectively about it.
Well, I mean, it's definitely, you know, one of the hottest breweries on the East Coast, and it's funny, sometimes brewers will come by, like, the bar and stuff, and want to try something, and they're definitely always looking. I knew, Scott was on the map when Garrett Oliver came in. He's like, I really want to try some Captain Lawrence. And because he's usually pretty picky about what he drinks and stuff. And he
Garrett
definitely
is
a big fan of yours. So,
he's a good man.
So that's always a good sign.
All right. Well, you know, we could take a short break now. We usually do. We're here on Heritage Radio Network. And we'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're up here in Cooperstown, New York at Belgian Comes to Cooperstown Brewery Omegang. There's a lot of words, a lot of...
Say that four times fast.
Cooperstown, New York. Belgian Comes to Cooperstown Omegang Brewery, or Brewery Omegang. The reason that's cool is that many of you may not know that Cooperstown, New York was the capital of hops for America for many years. And what's amazing is that people don't know that, but it was why there was Anheuser-Busch. I mean, the Busch family owned much of the land around here in the 1900s, and many of them today still own the states. And later, by the 1950s, they moved out to the Pacific Northwest. But hops was what Cooperstown was about. And we do have some special guests that we will talk to about it. But before we get to that, we're going to give our toasts and raise our glasses to our friend, Sean Lawson, from Lawson's Finest in Vermont.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, man.
And it's his birthday. And for our listeners,
it's my birthday.
And he can dance.
And
only the white guy.
So you guys know what's happening out there is that you may not hear what's going on out there, but it is Sean Lawson's birthday. Guys, bring it down. Come on. Bring it down. All right. And this show will be aired on August 30th. You can listen to that. It will be archived and also available on iTunes. And we do it every week on Heritage Radio Network. So we're actually doing a live audience here at Omegang Brewery.
Our first
it's
time.
It's kind of fun. Our first time. And thanks for coming along with us. Because what the hell? Is it? Again, Sean Lawson's birthday.
Woo! Great to be here. Thank you. And we're actually drinking one of his beers.
Which beer is this, Dave?
It's the only Latin beer we've had on this show. Acer Quercus.
Is that how you really pronounce it?
I don't know. Is that how you pronounce it, Sean?
That's how you pronounce it.
Sean, how do you pronounce it?
Acer Quercus.
Scott Vicar, how do you pronounce it?
Acer Quercus.
All right. Does anybody want to say it?
Acer Quercus.
Wow.
And Sean, what does Acer Quercus mean?
They're the genuses for maple and oak, and two of the ingredients that feature prominently in this beer.
Yeah, so why don't you describe... Well, first of all, tell us the story, like how this beer even happened.
Well, the brewery is out in Southern California, Orange County, Placentia, California, and a lot like Scott, they do a lot of barrel aging, some sour beers, and a lot of Belgian sort of inspired beers. And they also do some maple beer, which is one of my specialties. And so last year at the World Beer Cup, we both scored with a maple beer. So I made the connection with Patrick and we kicked around the idea of collaborating on a maple beer, and he liked the idea, so we put together...
And Patrick is Patrick.
Patrick Roof, sorry, he's the owner of the brewery, and they started out right about the same time that we did, a little over 3 years ago, and we kicked around some ideas for doing a maple beer, and I was going to be out there anyhow in this past March for the Craft Brewers Conference, and so we put together a plan to do a big maple beer with some California ingredients and some wood and a little maple wood smoked malt to add to the complexity, some dark specialty malts and rye, and then it was fermented on toasted oak cubes along with some California date sugar in there. So we were going for a big, complex beer with a lot of different flavors going on, but dried out at the finish, so it didn't seem real sweet or too huge on the mouthfeel.
Sean, one of the things that's great about Obengang's Belgian Comes to Cooperstown is just how many cool small breweries they invite up here. How did you get invited to come to this awesome festival?
I bugged them for long enough. Actually, I just had to ask. Last year, was interested in coming over, and David told me what a great festival. I mean, he said he's like, yeah, it's one of the best festivals anywhere, definitely on the East Coast, and I would fully agree. After last year's experience, I was raving for the last year about how Brewery Omegang really knows how to throw a party and put on a great festival here.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, cheers to Brewery Omegang.
Yeah.
And Larry Bennett. These guys are awesome.
And so we came in last year. I brewed a beer that I've only done for this festival. It's called Session in the Rye, and that's what we're serving up at the festival. And we did that last year as well, but we did it with a few different treatments this year. So having come last year, we got the invite for this year, and we're thrilled to be back.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, what do you have to say about these guys? You live in Vermont part-time, and yeah, I feel like you've been discovering other great Vermont brewers.
Like with all of them, I just wish they made more, and that I didn't have to drive all the way to the Mad River to get it. And every time he comes out with something new, I'm like, can I just have like one bottle, you know? And but it's great to have him here because all of a sudden he's in our campsite and you get to have, you know, he's always bringing great stuff down and we get to try a lot of cool stuff. And then right around the corner is Scott with his pig and it all kind of seems to go together. Trade beer for pork.
What's one of the great Vermont beer festivals that you go to?
Well, we just went to Vermont Brewers Fest. And actually, I poured for Sean, which was really fun. It's you don't even get to look up because his line is so freaking long. It was like over 30 minutes, and they're standing in the hot sun. And so they finally get to you, and you're just like, thanks for waiting in line. And but he brought, I think he brought five different beers, and really great lineup. But there were a lot of great breweries there, and it's a really great festival. And you know, Sean, it's helped. I'm sure it's helped you put you on the map, and you're very loyal to it. And a lot of the small brewers, I think, kind of feel that way about that festival.
Sean, right on the water as well. It's a beautiful spot.
Yeah, it's right on the lake, yep. Lake Champlain. Yep.
How did you ever start brewing?
I started as a home brewer in college. I went to UVM, University of Vermont, and a buddy of mine was a home brewer. And
what's the name of your homebrew club?
Well, currently there's a group in the Mad River Valley. We're the Wanna Brew Club, the Lager Boys.
Lager Boys,
yeah. So, and I've been brewing with them for a bunch of years. But I started in college. A friend of mine, Matt Robinson, he got me started. He came by with one of his beers one day, and I was cracked it open. I was like, "Wow, this is good. You made this?" He's like, "Hell yeah! So, show me how." So. He got me started, brewed up my first batch with me, and yeah, I caught the bug after that. So worked in a few breweries after college and pursued a different career for a while, but kind of came full circle back to the beer. And you know, after homebrewing for a lot of years, people kept asking about buying it. So I said, you know, let's give it a go and try it out as a brewery.
And I'm new to this. I've never met you before. What beer should I try to know your beers?
What do you like? What's your style?
See, that's the dumbest question ever.
Sweet or hoppy?
I have to ask the dumb questions.
Yeah. Well,
your beer that you like the most right now.
The Double Sunshine Double IPA is definitely a favorite for the hoppy beers.
On the Triple Play.
Triple Play.
Which he which he entered, which he entered into the IPA, you know, the IPA
live audience, guys, live audience,
and won.
With brewing news.
And like, I mean, yeah. One thing, like, Sean's a one barrel brewery, you know. I mean, he is a nano brewery, and so to win that, you know, IPA tournament, that's a pretty big deal. I mean, he's going up a lot of, against a lot of the great IPAs, single IPAs in the country, so that's a huge deal.
That was a lot.
And he's got a really nice banner.
Yeah, we hung that.
When you
the
win
Vermont
that thing, they give you this great banner that you can display.
Yeah, we brewed up some more of that beer for the Vermont Brewers Festival. Hung the banner, so that was a lot of fun. We got our year of glory on that one. So, and then you know, being from Vermont, maple beers are really one of our specialties. So I do a number of different maple beers, everything from a light sessionable maple that we were trying out here at the festival, Maple Sunrise, to much stronger beer, the Maple Triple, which I do once a year with concentrated maple sap. So we take the sap from the trees, and we work with a sugar maker. He boils it down like partway to syrup so that it has about 10% sugar. And that's the water, that's the liquid that we use to brew with, which is, it's pretty amazing. Yeah, so you're starting with 10 Play-Doh for awesome. Your mashing and your sparge water and everything. So that's that is the essence of maple. I haven't found another way to get maple to present itself in the final product any better than using that concentrated sap.
Would you ever work with like a maple sugar powder or something?
Well, the other maple beers, we use maple syrup. And again, I work with a couple of different local sugar makers. Paul Marble and Peter Purinton are a couple of different guys that do syrup up in Vermont. And they both make excellent syrup. And so the syrup usually typically goes in at the end of the boil.
So it's a syrup form. It's not in like a powdered sugar form.
Right. It's the same stuff you would put on your pancakes. I put it in my coffee every day. Love the stuff.
I mean, what do you guys think as Scott and Sean, as, you know, small brewers, how do you feel about people using like things like corn syrup powder and other types of powdered sugars? Do you think that's right or do you think that's cheating?
Depends on the beer and how you use it. I mean, I use a little corn sugar in some of my bigger IPAs in particular because it helps lighten the body and it ferments out very clean. It doesn't need really any flavor to the beer, but it helps you achieve that double IPA strength, the 8-9% that I usually shoot for in those beers, and it lightens up the body. If you're just using it to stretch out your beer and use cheaper ingredients, then I might not look so favorably upon it, but I don't frown upon it as an ingredient at all.
Yeah, we use it as well. I mean, for the same reason in the IPA.
Yep.
I mean, you should just look at the final, you know, the final beer. Were the ingredients used in a way that made a very flavorful and, you know, interesting beer? Were they used, like you said, just to cut corners and be cheap about it? So look at the final product and then judge from there.
Yeah, it really depends on your attitude, you know, exactly what you're trying to accomplish.
And Dave, you're good friends with Sean Hill from Hill Farmstead, right?
Yeah.
So other small brewers up in Vermont.
Yeah, there's quite a few great small brewers up in Vermont. And it's definitely going through another renaissance up there, I think. And,
another wave of breweries.
Yeah, another wave of breweries. There are a bunch of people opening up that we don't even know. I mean, some of them we don't even know. We just heard about.
Yeah, there's one. I'm not even sure what the name of it is yet, but they have just joined the Brewers Association.
Yeah.
And they're going to start doing barrel sour beers with just without a brewery.
They're just going to get work
from
and ferment
one of the bigger
themselves.
True blenders.
Yeah.
And just
that's pretty cool.
It themselves.
Just all about barrels.
Still need all the same licensing.
Like the Mystic guys.
Yeah.
In the Cambridge area.
Well, I'll tell you guys, this is supposed to be a recorded show, but guess what? This is really a live show. This audience here, give your love to Sean here. This is amazing. Come on. I mean, we got some of the rising stars are brewing right here, and you know, listeners
good,
out there, when you listen to this
business.
On August 30th and beyond, just know if they're cheering, they're cheering for Sean Lawson and Scott Vaccaro. You got Captain Lawrence brewing, yeah. All right, and we're going to be back. Is it time to check out? No. We'll be back in a few minutes. Talk more about Cooperstown, New York, and all these great things on Beer Sessions Radio. Thank you. I just can't find the babe. I've never tried.
make me do it. Damn, sucker.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're up in Cooperstown, New York at the BCTC at Brewery Omegang. I still get lost in all those letters and words, but happy to be with Dave Broderick from Blind Tiger. Hey, Dave, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing great. And actually, before we even go on, I just want to like thank our crew that like did all this work. Luke and Matt on the sound, and Bree, who is pregnant.
Bree O'Connor, yeah.
About to give birth. Did a lot of work.
Morton, our buddy.
Yep, and Morton, like, all of a sudden showed up in the middle of the night and got his tent up. And
Did we shout out to the Allagash Rendon?
Yes.
This is Allagash
Rendon. We're having right now. Actually, you're having him. I'm not having
him. And we got Scott Vaccaro from Captain Lawrence.
What's up?
And Sean Lawson from Lawson's Finest. Hey.
Happy birthday.
What are we drinking right now?
One of the coolest things about Cooperstown is that it was the hop capital of America for a long time. And we're here with... Whoa, this is a live show at Omegang Beer Fest. Love that. We are here with Garrett Livermore. He's Garrett, tell us your official position, because you're a very important guy in New York State agriculture.
I'm the vice president of the Farmers Museum, and we reintroduced growing hops in central New York after about a 70-year absence. In the 19th century, this was the epicenter of all hops production in the U.S. 80% of the hops grown throughout the U.S. were grown within 50 to 100 miles of where we now sit.
Well, this is the serious part. I mean, really, and we came up last year.
I think this farm, I mean, that this brewery is sitting on was a hop farm.
Yes. This whole valley from Oneonta to Cooperstown was filled with hops from one side to the other.
And what are they growing now?
They're growing not much. There's a few dairy farms that are growing corn. But we're talking about reintroducing hops. UVM and Cornell University have a joint program called the Northeast Hops Alliance to try to promote northeastern hops growing, so to bring it back to this part of the world.
And on our show on Beer Sessions Radio, we've had a few guests talking about hops in the last year, and we kind of figured out that what really happened was that a lot of land, I mean, there was issues with which hops could grow in New York, and then there was prohibition. But by the 50s, what happened was some of the large hop-growing families actually found like this wide open plains in the Pacific Northwest, cheaper land, a slightly better climate, and
drier.
They started growing their hops. But here's a good question. This is from one of our audience members. It's actually Morton Millen, who's here from New York today. He asked, what variety of hops would do well in New York State if we're going to bring back the New York State hop growing industry?
Traditionally, the hops industry was based on the English variety. So that's actually Fuggle's vine there that we grow at the Farmers Museum. Golding is a good variety as well. But it's actually a pretty good climate for hops all around. So you could probably introduce some of the German varieties.
Like which ones? Which ones would you think?
That'd be a good question. We've been focusing on keeping the English varieties alive.
Because I know up in Vermont, which in a similar climate, there's been a lot of the UVM program, and there's been a lot of conferences and stuff. And there's been a lot of Cascade growing,
right.
A lot of the sea hops, Centennial, Columbus, right. Chinook.
Right. Well, all those USDA-sponsored hops that were promoted by the industrial hops farms in the Northwest, they're just like any other variety of plant that's going through that process. They're very vigorous growers. They respond well to fertilizer and other interventions. So to get back to a more organic variety, if you wanted to do what was traditionally grown here, we're familiar with the English, and that's probably the way I'd go.
So, well, let's ask our small brewers on the panel, like, what would you, if you guys, have you, first of all, used any local hops in your brewing, and what would you be looking for?
We have a farm about 3 miles away that is actually growing us Cascade, Chinook, Nugget, and I forget the last one. But they grow, I mean, extremely well, and, we get enough for... basically enough to dry hop a batch or, dry hop some casks. We don't get a tremendous amount, but it's definitely fun to play with. And the hops that they're using, the new USDA, the sea hops, they're cranking. This is the third year they've been in the ground, and they're doing a great job. And my parents' backyard's been taking over mine as well.
Of course.
What about Sean up in Vermont?
I grew a little hops at our place, and again, we use them more as a specialty application, like our homegrown hops, use it to harvest beer in the fall. That's really all we're able to the grow is to do one harvest here in the fall. But I have been getting some of the other local grown hops from folks in Vermont who are either experimenting or doing it on the side. They have an existing farm, or that are trying to get into commercial farming. And so I know that the work in Vermont that's focused on hops with UVM and the Department of Agriculture is really trying to put together, from the brewers to the growers, what is it that the brewers need and want. And it's really consistency and enough yield that you could do something with it, because on such a small scale that there is now, you couldn't have a steady supply of hops that are Vermont grown. It would be more for a specialty beer or seasonal sort of application.
I think people need to know that the biggest problem is that there's no lab report on these hops. You have no idea how strong they are, and so you can't use them throughout the whole brew because you don't really know what you're dealing with. So that's kind of what the East Coast is up against now.
Well, and the grower's perspective is it's a very land-intensive, very labor-intensive crop. So there are other organic crops that they're choosing to go into first, but hopefully by creating the demand on the brewer's side, it'll get people to kind of work through those hurdles.
I think I misunderstood. For some reason, I thought that hops were the plant that you would grow that could within weeks just start sprouting and grow up to 40 feet without any attention. Is that true?
It grows to 20 to 30 to sometimes even 40 feet. But you're trying to get these flowers, and these flowers are quite delicate. They have to be picked at just the right time. They have to be picked by the right amount of stemmage. You don't want too much stemmage. So it can be a very fussy crop in a lot of ways. It's also subject to the tomato blight. And those home growers of tomatoes have been suffering the blight. We suffer the same thing attacks hop plants.
So you, if you can't see this on the radio right now, there's an awesome, vine?
A clipping from a hop vine.
You brought a clipping, and this is what? Shows the plant itself, or what?
This shows the female plant. Hops are dioecious. They're male and female plants. You only want female plants in your hop yard, because as soon as you have a male plant in and they fertilize, they start producing eggs. The lupulin count, and lupulin is what produces the flavor, goes way down. It becomes a much less desirable.
So the males screw up the crop.
Yes. In Germany, I understand they even have laws against having male hop plants in certain jurisdictions. They're screening for gender.
Wow. And what about these tools? You've got these... Are these anti-male tools? What are these things?
No.
It's like a torture device.
These are hop sampling tools. In the 19th century, they were very concerned about the quality. Actually, this place was known not just for quantity, but Cooperstown shipped hops to the leading brewers of Europe as well as the U.S. And these are sampling tools. So they would leave the warehouse, and the buyers, as soon as they were on their car, before they signed the checks, would use this to, it's a giant kind of torture-looking device, and it reaches in and grabs, and you pull out hops from the center of a bale, because these little flowers are dried and then baled up in a very tight bale. Because you want to make sure the hops at the center are the same quality as the hops at the end. Because sometimes unscrupulous growers would pack their bale, so the nice high-quality hops would be on the outside, and the garbage would be in the inside.
And they would check them bale by bale.
They couldn't check every bale by bale because there were thousands of bales living here, but they'd pull bales from the center of boxcars and pull out, samples. But be really...
So at the end of the day, to make really good beer, you have the same issues that faces any agricultural endeavor.
Yes.
You have to deal with trust and integrity and quality.
Mm-hmm. In fact, early in the hops industry in the U.S., the center was in Massachusetts, and Massachusetts lost its hop production because they were selling bad hops to the brewers in Philadelphia and New York. They weren't doing the same quality control.
That's so Massachusetts.
Assholes.
They got a bad rep, and they lost the market, and that's when they came over to Central New York in the 1840s.
It always gets them.
Yep.
Well, how about this? I mean, we've got here a great panel. We've got Dave Broder from Blind Tiger and some great brewers here. So if they pick up this little hop, what is this called? This is called a hop flower.
This is the important part. That's where all the flavor is. If you pull the petals back and look at the inside, you'll see a yellow substance, looks like pollen. That's lupulin. That's actually the flavor that goes into the beer. And it's just about ripe. Ripeness is the end of August and to the middle of September, depending upon the year. And you can kind of smell the flavor in that hop.
It smells delicious.
So right now, these are what you call fresh hops, right?
Yes.
So Scott, if you had a bunch of these fresh hops,
Yeah.
How many of these would you need to make like a typical batch of beer?
Well, I think that the ratio that I've heard thrown around is that you need to use about six times more in weight with fresh hops than you would have to dried and processed hops. So, you know, if a batch of beer you put in 20 pounds, if you want to brew with fresh hops, you're using 120 pounds.
So to get about 120 pounds of this fresh hops,
to brew a 20
barrel batch. How many vines of this would we need? It's hundreds, complicated.
Hundreds, if not thousands.
And so. Like, do you brew with whole hops? I mean,
yeah, and that's the biggest thing. No, we don't. I mean, we
because most don't. Most
small,
don't brew with.
A lot of small breweries. I mean, it's a whole other process to strain these things out. Right. Pellets, which are, you know, the usual usage with a small brew system, kind of not dissolve completely, but they dissolve enough into the beer. They don't clog anything. And so, yeah, I think that's the biggest issue that faces New York and East Coast growers is that right now there's really no facility to have them pelletized.
Well, but Atlantic Hops, who we had on the show, Mike, they're going to be
opening something larger.
Right, down in, yeah, down in your area.
15 minutes from our brewery, if that.
He's going to be pelletizing hops, so that's a huge deal.
We're very excited about that.
And are they open yet, or they're hoping to
open? He's in the process.
So,
and I believe he has something going in Michigan, right? Gorse Valley.
Yeah, I think so.
So there's a thing called Atlantic Hops that's, he's hoping to open in the Northeast market.
The growers will bring him hops, raw hops, and he will process
it. It's like the small maltster that Scott used up in Massachusetts in Hadley.
So the Valley Malts.
We're back to Massachusetts again. But Valley Malts, yeah, it's a husband and wife team. But
I put in an order for 1,200 pounds, and she's like, that's going to ruin my whole weekend. It's going to take 3 days. Yeah. I don't want to ruin your weekend.
Right. So what you're saying, it's complex. For you guys to make good beer, it's really it's complicated. I mean, you have to get, you know, hops and pellets, and you have to get malted barley.
Yeah, sure.
And you don't have the resources locally.
And just, you know, on hops, too, being, you know, that it is an agricultural product. I mean, when we opened up in 2006, I think I was paying $4.50 a pound for Cascades. By 2008, maybe it was, we were paying $23 a pound.
Wow.
I mean, that is shocking.
Well, we heard that. I mean, some of the typical, if you guys care about the price of beer, we talk about what's the price of a pint of beer. Do you guys think that $6 is fine for a pint of craft beer? $7? I mean, I've seen in 10 years, the typical keg of beer that I buy wholesale in New York City has gone up 50%.
I mean, I was going to say, actually, it's doubled.
But my pricing, I still charge a $6 pint.
Our pricing's only gone up like 30%, but the cost has doubled over since 96, since, you know, we first got in the business. It's everything has doubled. And yet our prices have only gone up 30%.
So this beer seems so easy to people. I mean, I think that, especially at home brewing, a beer seems so easy. But it's not. It's like to make good beer and to make it in a quantity you can sell, there's so many factors involved with this. Who's, you know, what you guys are saying. And Sean, for you, what are you doing? You're just buying, you know, what you can in terms of hops and malt?
Yeah, like Scott mentioned, in 2008, the prices went way up. I was right when we opened. So that was definitely one of the challenges, you know, we faced, was one, even just getting the varieties that we wanted. So now most, even small brewers have contracts so they can secure the hops that they need. And that'll really help out the Northeast hop growing market. You know, if brewers commit to, you know, buying the crop that certain farmers are doing, then it really brings the whole system along. So
It's kind of interesting because all of a sudden Hop Union, which is one of the major hop brokerage,
the Yakima cartel,
right? The Yakima cartel, they control a lot of it, but all of a sudden they have a rep on the East Coast because they're a little bit nervous about all this new growing going on the East Coast.
So it would take to be a critical mass and break
exactly.
That cartel.
So the guys in the Pacific Northwest, you know, they stole all the East Coast business back in, you know, 100 years ago. They don't want to lose it.
No, when we first heard about the hops, and you kind of believed the story was, there was a, you know, hop blight in the 1800s.
Right.
Hops really couldn't grow in New York.
And they also prohibition. They undercut the market.
When we really met some of the big growers, it really was that land opened in the Pacific Northwest that was cheaper.
Right.
And that's really what it was. At the end of the day, it was that they moved to a cheaper market like they do in a lot of, you know, commodity businesses.
Right. And it's a commodity. Right. It's not a special.
So the reason we're saying that is that we're big supporters of local markets, and that, you know, we do think that hopefully there could be New York-grown hops and New York-grown malt, you know.
And it'll bring back some
And we do hope that, yeah.
And definitely the guys in the Pacific Northwest are getting nervous about it. So yeah. That's a good sign.
Well, I will say, if you smell this, doesn't it smell nice? A fresh hop? Does everybody in our audience, our live audience? Woo! Sean Lawson's birthday party. Does everybody have a hop flower to smell? Do you? Is everybody?
If you don't, I think we're going to eat this on our armpits tomorrow.
Yeah. When you're done, we're going to wrap it up in a few minutes, but come up here and grab one of these hop flowers because it's pretty awesome.
Yeah. Hops are a member of the cannabis family.
Yes. Yeah, that's true. We should talk about hops' cannabis. Cousins.
No.
Well, kissing cousin. That would be Sam Merritt. We'd talk about that.
I'll tell you what, we got a lot more shows to do about hops on Beer Sessions Radio on the heritageradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who've helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. We'll be aired on August 30th. Please check us out. And thanks to our hosts here at Brewery Oma Gang. And definitely visit goodbrewseal.com to learn more about things like Beer Sessions Radio and other really cool beer events. Thanks to our guests, Garrett, Sean. Raise your hand when I say it. Garrett, Sean, Scott, Tom, oh, Tom's on your Dave, Jimmy, for joining me here on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni, and thanks to our producers, Jack Inslee and Brie O'Connor. Again, a big cheer to our good friend, Ray Dieter.
Ray.
We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. Thank you. All right.
This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and sometimes it makes me feel mellow. Whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much.
This is a message from Fork and Anchor. Aaron Fitzpatrick, the host of our wine program, Unfiltered, is looking for help on Kickstarter to open Fork and Anchor, a general store inspired by two food-loving ladies with an equal affection for urban life, the sea, and the agricultural paradise of Long Island's North Fork. The store is situated in a growing community of farmers and winemakers and will become a meeting place offering prepared foods, a variety of sundries, and a selection of homespun products, many of which will have their origins in New York State. Your backing will help them fulfill their dream of fostering relationships with the community and making the local food system accessible on a broader scale. Search Kickstarter.com for Fork and Anchor and donate today. The following is a message from NOFA NY. Do you dig local food? Love organic farmers? Do you crave to be part of a growing movement of consumers concerned with the state of our nation's food system? Then sign up today to take the NOFA NY's Locavore Challenge this September. Join 5,000 other New York locavores that are hungry, active, and ready to change our food system. Learn more at www.nylocavorechallenge.com.